Translation. Translator's note. In spite of this circumstantial prefatory statement, and the accusation which was brought against this legend on its first appearance by one over-clever critic, that is, that it was ancient and threadbare in public knowledge, the fact remains that the author invented every syllable of it. Tula is the Sheffield of Russia, being the seat of the government gunworks and possessed of innumerable shops engaged in the manufacture and sale of all sorts of metal goods. Sestroyetsk, on the shore of Finland, opposite Kronstadt, is the site of a gun factory founded by Peter the Great in 1714. The ancient faith means that the old gunsmith belonged to the old believers, also called the Raskolniki, a sect which insists that the proper orthodox manner of making the sign of the cross is with the thumb and forefinger instead of with the thumb and first two fingers, and which refused to accept the correction of typographical errors in the church service books ordered by the patriarch Nikon in the reign of Peter the Great's father. In the early days they were harshly treated, and even burned themselves alive rather than accept the heresy of the state church. Nowadays, no attention is paid to them, officially or otherwise. Chapter 1. When the Emperor Alexander Pavlovich had finished the Congress of Vienna, he took a fancy to travel all over Europe and visit the marvels of the different realms. He journeyed through all lands, and everywhere, by reason of his amiability, he always held the most internecine discussions with all men, and all amazed him by one means or another, and sought to incline him to their side. But he had a Cossack of the Don named Platov, attached to his personal service, who did not like this inclination, and being homesick for his own hearthstone, he constantly sought to lure the emperor to his home. So as soon as Platov perceived that the emperor took a deep interest in any foreign thing, and all his suite held their peace, he began to say immediately, "Thus and so, and we have the same thing of our own at home, not a whit worse," and then he would turn him aside in one way or another. The English people were aware of this, and had prepared various cunning devices against the emperor's arrival, to the end that they might captivate him with foreign things, and in many cases they attained their object, especially in the great assemblies where Platov could not express himself perfectly in French. But he did not mind that overmuch, because he was a married man, and regarded all French conversation as mere emptiness, unworthy of his imagination. But when the English began to invite the emperor to all their arsenals, armories, shops, and soap-sawing factories, in order to demonstrate their superiority over us in all things, Platov said to himself, "Come, there has been enough of this sort of thing. Up to this point I have endured in patience, but beyond this it's impossible. I may manage to say the right thing, or I may not, but I won't betray my own people." And no sooner had he uttered these words to himself than the emperor said to him, "Thus and so, tomorrow you and I will go to inspect their arsenal museum. There," says he, "exist such perfections of nature that when you look upon them you will no longer dispute the fact that we Russians, in spite of all our self-importance, are of no account whatever." Platov made no reply, but merely buried his hooked nose in his shaggy felt cloak, retired to his quarter, commanded his orderly to fetch a flask of Caucasian brandy from the cellaret, tossed off a bumper, prayed to God before a holy picture which folded up for traveling, wrapped himself in his thick felt mantle, and began to snore so that not a single Englishman in all the house was able to sleep. He said to himself, "The morning is wiser than the evening." Chapter 2. On the following day, the emperor and Platov went to the museum. The emperor took none of the other Russians with him, because he had been provided only with a two-seated carriage. They drive up to a smallish building, the entrance indescribable, corridors stretching out interminably, and a row of chambers one after another, and at last in the chief hall of all, diverse huge busts, and in the center, under a canopy, stands the Abolo Polveder. The emperor casts a glance at Platov to see whether he is much amazed, and what he is gazing at. But Platov is walking along with downcast eyes, as though he beholds nothing, and is merely twisting his mustaches into rings. The Englishman immediately begins to exhibit diverse marvels, and explain to what ends they are adapted in military matters. See burimeters, mammals, hair, mantles of the infantry regiments, and for the cavalry, tarred waterproofs.